Is that from Doctor Who?
No, it's from Star Trek, Danae. You're on a Star Trek podcast. No, it was not a Doctor Who reference. Captain's Pod, Stardate 1450-34.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me, as always, she has a second face that she's forbidden to reveal. It's Ambassador Danae.
You'll never know what I'm wearing under my skin. It's like when I go in for one of those chemical peels when I get my facials.
And Do you reveal a jellied underside to your skin?
This is why they make me sign a waiver that I won't sue, is just in case my face does turn to jelly.
Oh no.
Have you ever had a face peel before? A chemical peel?
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I've had a face mask thing that's gone on my face.
Yeah.
It stays there, it turns hard, and then you peel it off.
Okay. This is a chemical peel where they take a light form of acid. And they put it, they gently wipe it on your skin to essentially burn off in a very controlled way the top layer of your skin so that you have the nice fresh skin underneath.
Isn't it just like exposed to germs then? Like, we need that layer to stop the germs and
which
stuff.
Which is why they then add a whole bunch of layers of product that you then also have to purchase.
Right, yeah.
To protect yourself.
I love that these are likely the same people that don't like the word chemical in their food, but are happy to put it on their face.
So I'm guessing you haven't done this before.
No, I haven't done that. No, I go the Sona route, which is a face stretching session where they inject a toxin into your face and then they stretch the skin over your skull and then like butterfly clip it at the back so it stays really taut and nice. Yeah.
Is that from Doctor Who?
No, it's from Star Trek, Danae. You're on a Star Trek podcast. I made a very specific Star Trek Insurrection reference on the Star Trek podcast that I host. No, it was not a Doctor Who reference. Doctor Who regenerates. He doesn't need skin regimen.
But there's that skin creature. I thought you were going for the
Cassandra.
Skin creature.
Yeah, Cassandra. I know exactly. Cassandra, she is played by Zoe Wanamaker. She is stretched across a frame. She has to be moisturized and sprayed. I know Doctor Who too, but that's for my other show. Anyway, speaking of Star Trek, we are now at the halfway point through Discovery. So let's do a mini review. How has your first 5 episodes of Discovery treated you? And what are you looking forward to for the next 5 episodes?
Ooh, I like this show. I think you and I were talking earlier about how the characters, I'm getting to know the characters really well. I feel like pretty quickly, which feels good. I'm glad.
Yeah. You seem pretty invested and in tune with the characters, considering you've only just met them and you haven't seen anything else.
And I like that. I also like that you have more information for me from time to time, which feels really good too. Like they're not going so far swinging in one direction where they're giving me too much or giving me too little. Mm-hmm. It just seems like it's a really good hit. And I think that's a testament to the acting and the passion that Star Trek has and all the history that they get to pull from. It just seems like everybody is having a good time and taking their roles seriously and coming to the table every day or coming to the set every day to present their best. And so I'm in for it. It kind of reminds me of watching the original series, and I can be so taken out of the moment because it looks ridiculous by today's standards, but because the actors are really drawing me in, then I'm having a good time. And I feel like Discovery is doing that too. But the big difference is that there's so much more to look at on a set like Discovery.
It's
and
so pretty.
You pair in like all the CGI. So I really enjoyed the first few episodes. I mean, last episode was a little bit of a downer. And
yeah.
I'm a little nervous about today's episode because Darmok was mentioned and I'm nervous about that. But
I can't get Darmok out of my head. It's whistle speak. I feel like there's going to be some Darmok happening.
I'm a little nervous. Not, you know, knowing that the writers didn't know that it was coming to an end, how it's all going to wrap up. Are we going to go Picard? What are we doing here? Mm-hmm. But I have several good episodes. I really enjoyed last week's episode. Every time I think about something that I've seen, I just am really, I get kind of impressed. I like their monsters and their sets, and they're just doing a lot. It's a big cast, and I think that they're doing a lot. So I'm nervous.
Yeah, I think they're juggling a lot.
What about you? Because you're like the guy that's seen it all. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I said this last week. I have the same concerns and issues with Discovery Season 5 that I've had with the other seasons of Discovery, but this has had a really, really strong opening for me, especially that timey-wimey bottle episode. My biggest critique is that we're not having enough time with the established crew. Like, there's people that have been inexplicably sidelined that you're not going to get to see during this, like, victory lap that we'll have to go back in season, like, previous seasons, because I want to spend this last season with the core crew. But overall, I'm having a really good time. I think it's been eerily kind to people that are new to Discovery, and you're, like, evidence of that. It hasn't really punished you if you haven't seen seasons 1 to 4. Like, this, that's the advantage of, like, having a fresh mystery and introducing Rainer and new characters. So overall, I really enjoyed it. Bit of a dip last week. I am excited for whatever comes next, though. Whistlespeak has tingled me. But before that, let's get into some of your predictions and our predictions before we head over and watch the episode. Emails. Okay, Hailing Frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. There is a timestamp in the description if you'd like to skip this section for fear of potential spoilers. Sometimes when I hear a prediction, I'm like, oh, now I can't think of anything else. So check the description if you want to skip ahead to 10 forward. Our first prediction comes from David via email, who thinks that the ISS Enterprise is somehow going to have a big payoff and return at the end of the season to somehow save the day. My gut instinct is that that's a bit shit to Discovery. Like, if anyone's saving the day, it should be Discovery. And I don't know how this 1,000-year-old ship is going to be of assistance. However, they've saved it for a reason, right?
No. I mean, well, they can do whatever they want. I think there's a potential that it just goes to one of those cool space museums.
Geordi's Museum, yeah.
Yeah, and just floats Starbase there. 12, people can go. They decommission it so that when people push the buttons, nothing happens.
But people still get very precious about it. Like, don't touch it. It's an antique. Right. It's a relic.
And then they can see, like, where things happen. And then, like, our Saru goes and looks what the mirror Saru did to save them. And he has, like, a little moment where he thinks somehow, no matter where he exists, he's just good. And then he has a god complex. And then Q shows up and tells him that he's actually the original
OG. The continuum hasn't been heard of for hundreds of years. They've disappeared.
This is when it happens. And then Saru turns evil. And then he steals the ISS. Mm-hmm. And then he goes and he does something that you would never believe. And he goes in the wormhole and talks to the god people.
Yeah, I like this.
And then the god people are like, you should become one of us. And then the god people become bad, and they actually intentionally start to rule people instead of just accidentally they're hanging out in the wormhole god rule people.
You did
they
describe
really purposefully do it.
Yeah, no, you kind of described a good chunk of the last season of Deep Space Nine. There
god
is a character that goes into the wormhole, summons the evil version of the good gods, the Paravs, and they start running shit. They start, yeah. There's
how
two
does this
factions
keep happening?
Of gods. It's,
this,
I mean,
this
it's probably
has
a testament to how much Star Trek there is.
This has to be a future seasonal.
Yeah, it really has to
where,
be. Because
I
would
just
I would enjoy picking it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
I would enjoy forming your words into the episode. Well, that does lead into Paulie's prediction, which is that we haven't seen a lot of Saru because he's going to be jettisoned into a spin-off show focusing on his diplomatic job and the Vulcan separatists in this
boring
century.
Sorry.
What? No, I want more Doug Jones. I would love that. A Starfleet, like, Star Trek diplomatic corps series? I would love that. Or a movie?
There's corps TV shows in America that are like the White House and
the
whole
West Wing
series.
House of Cards,
the West
yes.
Wing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Star Trek West and Wing.
Some people love it. It's not my jam.
We're going to do it anyway. We'll cover it. You'll love it.
If there is a Star Trek show that is about the politics of this extreme purist Vulcan group, is there interest in that for real, do you think? Or are we just being silly?
I don't know about... The Vulcan separatists are too new. Like, that only got mentioned in episode 2. But there is a genuine desire for a Star Trek West Wing style of show which deals with the politics. Yeah, politics, Jesus policies, Christ, the backhanding, the actual consequences of the Prime Directive. I would watch the hell out of this show. Yes. That's the opening two-parter. It's just called Prime Directive. Nah.
No, it's called Prime Directive, the history, creation, and all annexes of. And it's just like somebody reading from this 17, like, huge... files all pushed 17 together.
17 pads,
yeah.
And there's just somebody in the background throwing darts at a picture of Picard. Because he's violated it so much. So yeah, in summary, I think that would be great. I mean, no. We know we're getting more spin-offs in this universe. We're getting Section 31. We're getting the Starfleet Academy show. It looks like the Star Trek universe plan is to play in the 3200s. So why the heck not? I'm kind of here for it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more likely that we'll see Saru in one of those series rather than his own West Wing spinoff.
But. Man, now that you've said it, let's just manifest that into the universe. Let's not. I believe
if
it.
There's got to be like a balance. You're trying to manifest it and I'm trying to squash it.
Oh, and but it still happens, but it's disappointing to both of us. That's how that lands. Well, there's one very specific prediction from Wandering Winder who believes that this episode will have no Locke and Moll until the very, very end, and they will act as a teaser for next week, and that we will be split 50-50 between Saru and the diplomats and our crew on the Discovery. You excited to... You're going to predict some Locke and Moll this week? Yeah, no, you don't want any Locke and Moll this week.
I don't. No, I think we've seen enough... I know they're going to have to come back at some point in time because they're an intricate part of this particular season and they've got to have a purpose and value. And, you know, what is the show trying to do with it? TBD. So I know they're going to, you know, appear again. But after last week, I just need some time. It's like going to dinner and it was an edible dinner, but it didn't set well. And you can't just have edibles for dinner. You're trying to find like what was positive about it, and then you leave, and then a couple months later you're like, hey, should we go back to that restaurant again? And enough time has passed that you forget what happened. That's how long I hope we have before we see Locke and Moll again. Like, give me some time.
Yeah, forget enough to love them again. So you're saying that you don't want to eat any more jelly breans?
A jelly brean?
That's what the internet has dubbed the new Breen with a wiggly face. He's a jelly Breen.
Oh my god, it's a jelly Breen with a little gelatin.
I'm thinking about it every day, jelly Breens. And I just hope the creator of this new design isn't like, well, shit. That's now going to become bigger than the new design itself.
That creator of the new design should go on to a social media platform and just do a poll on what flavor jelly Breen it is.
Yes. Jelly Breen. I love it.
Is it like a apple tart sort of a...
It changes flavor halfway through. So it has two. Oh, like it has two flavors. One? Yeah. And no, it actually has a shell that you have to crack through. And then it has two different flavors. Yeah.
Two different flavors.
Yeah.
Both in the green category where... It, yeah. Because the booger one is in the green category, right?
Yeah. Lime and then apple. I think the first face is lime and then the solid face is apple because it's usually a lighter color.
You've really thought about this.
Yeah, jelly beans are all I can think about right now. I need that candy. Well, let's get into our predictions very quickly. Basically, we focused on the liquid. I think that it's going to contain a DNA sequence and proteins that will lead to the next planet and the next clue. You think it's a changeling, possibly Odo.
Hell yes.
Big swings all around.
Can we go back to the candy for a second?
I'm still trying to think of Star Trek puns.
We should move on.
With that, let's head over to the holodeck and watch season 5, episode 6 of Discovery. Whistle speak. Do to beam out. Welcome to Ten Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what is your thing of choice from the matter replication station?
Well, I think we know now we can safely drink what's in the vial.
Yeah, distilled water, I think. Yeah. Wait, can you drink distilled water? I thought you can.
Why wouldn't you?
No, I'm thinking of ionized water. The stuff that you put in like your iron. There's different water when you do ironing.
Ironing?
I don't know. Yeah, you know.
Ironing water?
An iron. Yeah, like an ironing board. And then you iron your shirts.
Yeah.
And then you put water in the iron for like the gas spray thing that comes out.
I just...
Wear your clothes.
I wear my clothes. I haven't ironed anything in a long time. Like when I recently had to use the iron, it was so covered in dust. Yeah. We had to clean the ironing board.
Just went up in flames.
But I don't think... I've ever heard of somebody using a specific type of water to iron. I've only ever just put tap water into my iron.
It's like ionized or iodized. It's something. There's a special ironing water that you buy to. But anyway, that doesn't matter. We're both having distilled water from the replicator. Give us a synopsis, Danae. Well,
let me just be clear. I want to mix mine with the sacrificial tears just for a little salt. Just a little hint of salt.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, wait. You know? But so not the sweat. So the tears, so because I'll take
specifically
the sweat.
The sacrificial tears of a young girl who's realizing that she's about to die and using her last breath to sing a song.
Oh,
and that'll launch us into the synopsis for today.
But she didn't whistle the song. Why aren't you whistling? Why didn't you whistle the? Why have we got humming in an episode called Whistle Speak?
That's what I'm saying. I guess we're skipping straight to the sins.
Get to the sins. Gosh dang it.
In today's episode, we answer the question why you shouldn't take drugs before running a marathon.
Right. However, you will really appreciate the water afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're going to spill it everywhere. You're going to listen to the director say, make sure that everyone watching knows that there's actually water in this bowl.
Yeah. Just spill it. Spill half the contents all over the place. Why was that so distracting? Because I had the same note.
It was so distracting.
Stop spilling the precious water of life.
In today's episode, we do uncover another clue, this time taking us to a planet where a race of aliens long ago interjected technology to assist them in surviving a planet that was similar to their own. And those old technologies are failing, and the progression of the civilization has decided to worship the rain as if it is controlled by a god. And so it had evolved, if evolving is the right word here, to include that you have to sacrifice someone in order for the rain to come. And so the arrival of the Discovery is going to support that theory on accident while also breaking the Prime Directive, but they're probably going to get okay because it was technically already broken because of the people that were previously there, but that's going to be thinking about the future. But anyway, people almost die, and then we break apart their brains and tell them that God doesn't exist in so many words or less.
No, we didn't do that.
No. That was actually a really interesting part, and I can't wait to talk about that part. But basically, this episode is the revelation that obviously with great power comes great responsibility, and that crisis of faith and evolution of thinking about our purpose in everything is also something that we shouldn't hold on to so tight that we are that we'll break. I thought that was kind of a cool theme. And that's my synopsis.
Yeah, some really cool themes this week and some parallels for once between what's happening on the ship and what's happening on the planet. Now, an amount of trepidation going in after a shaky episode last week and the looming fear of communication and Darmok. But...
Oh, I was so afraid.
Did you have a good time this week? What were your overall thoughts and feelings before we get into specifics?
Yeah, I thought this episode did a pretty good job of not telegraphing too much, but then also telegraphing it just enough at the right time that I was like, uh-oh, this is going to go...
There's a sacrifice coming.
This is them running up a mountain to jump into lava kind of a situation. I think it did what it wanted to do pretty well. And the juxtaposition on this one is back to the ship again. So we're not, we're looking at the whole crew again in a way and kind of seeing how everybody is coming together. I'm a little bit disappointed that Rainer is not taking more of a central role. But at the same time, I'm letting go that I think I'm very wrong about their intention with this character. And I had a pretty good time. Yeah, I don't think I actually did a time check on this one time, which is usually a good sign for me.
I think this teaches us a very valuable lesson, which is to always go through life with your expectations at rock bottom. Just expect nothing and everything seems better. I had a really good time with this episode. This really felt like I know we made the Darmok comparison before we'd seen anything, but I couldn't help feeling that this was a very classic Trek TNG, even Voyager-esque style of episode. I could really see the crew of Voyager stumbling upon this planet, doing the stuff with the towers, and there's some other mystery at the tower. It wouldn't be, obviously, this ongoing mystery. But it felt so true to what I love and adore about Star Trek. I think this did it really well. Yeah. It did. If there's one thing that kind of like brought it down some notches, is that it has every single civilization, believes in religion, cliche, sacrifice, prime directive thing going. I don't know that there's an original thought in this episode, but it executes its unoriginal thoughts excellently. Would be like my one sentence review.
That's really interesting, because it does seem to be doing a common sort of theme where you go to a planet, they're doing stuff that you don't want them to do, you want to help, but then what are the moral quandaries of the situation? And that's an interesting space to be in, and not literally space, but like an interesting position with which to tell your story. Mm-hmm. The story of this episode did centralize on the main idea of getting to the weapon. But it did have a lot of like the normal tropes. We can't beam in, we can't do this, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that gets a little bit distracting. And so there's a lot of the Star Trek cliche sin kind of feels, but you have to get used to that. That's just how every episode seems to go. Because if they were operating at their full capacity, it would be like playing chess against a computer or something like that.
Every single answer to the problem is transporters and replicators. That's game over. 100%. It's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had a really good time with it. Give us some of your highlights of the episode. Did like I mentioned, did this feel like your TNG memories to you as well?
Yeah, it definitely had a TNG-esque vibe to it. Maybe that's part of the reason that I was kind of like clipping along with it. Okay, I do have a question, because I feel like I'm missing something. There seems to be a theme with Tilly on this one that I think I'm missing a backstory or something about her character. So my question before I kind of go into it is, so in this episode, Tilly is sort of going alongside a young girl from this tribe of people. And this young girl is very enthusiastic about, you know, doing something dangerous. And then eventually revealing not only just dangerous, but like knowing that they could die and being excited about dying for the greater good of their community. And she seems to be paralleling it with something in her past. Like, did someone die that she gave advice to? Did that happen in her story? Because I feel like it's telegraphing that. I don't know.
I don't. Not that I can remember. So Tilly, in a few sentences, Tilly's arc was she was a cadet on Discovery. Very, very shy. Very, very, like a genius and absolutely brilliant, but very, very shy with it. She kind of opens up a bit when she's forced to take on the role of her dictator counterpart in the Mirror Universe. She gets a lot of confidence from that. Kind of disappears a little bit in season three. And then in season three and four, she's teaching at the academy. She leaves Discovery entirely to go and teach her cadets at the newly reformed Starfleet Academy. So she might be talking about, I think she's referring to giving advice to her cadets, and a lot of these cadets are dropping out and leaving because Starfleet, we've heard occasional lines where Starfleet is hesitant to graduate these cadets and put them out in the field because they're scared that they're not ready and they're not prepared yet. So some of them are dropping out and pursuing other fields, much like Mariner threatens to do, instead of sticking with Tilly. And Tilly is kind of in this moment of crisis where she's like, am I a bad teacher? Like, am I not doing a good job with these cadets? What can I do better?
Okay. Then I think that I'm on board with the episode even more, because I picked up on that element within the episode itself. So I feel like they're doing a good job of kind of encapsulating the most important pieces within the episode, like talking directly to the person like me who doesn't have all of the backstory.
Yeah.
But I could tell she was struggling with that, and maybe that needed to be outlined a little bit more somehow. But at the same time, I'm glad that they didn't go too deeply into it, because it might not be something that she can resolve. I did like that they opened the door for Michael to kind of potentially go to Starfleet and start helping too, because it seemed like Michael, she had a lot of history and passion for why Tilly and the captain were going down to the planet. And before I go on, the chat pointed out, rightfully so, that the character, the daughter that is trying to sacrifice themselves, is identifies as a they or them.
Yes.
And I heard Michael say that, but I wasn't sure if the character, if Michael was doing a non-assuming in that moment. And I like that the episode didn't make it so obvious that they were like making a point about it.
Yeah, it's almost great that we didn't notice. Yeah. It's really just like the dad that says it more than anybody else. And I think Dr. Colbert comes in at the end and says they. Yeah, it's really cool.
I like that I didn't even pick up on it enough that it was a, they didn't emphasize too much on that. And I know that Michael was also referencing that they had done research on the planet and that there were multiple identities, but at that debrief moment, I was so confused about whether we were talking about this planet or the aliens' planet history.
I thought they jumped to a different planet.
They were just popping. So I didn't really know that that was part of the debrief of where they were going. So, but anyways, my favorite parts, which was your question, like kind of my highlights, probably what stands out to me the most was that a thought that I had, which just means that the show I think was doing a good job, that this episode is simultaneously breaking down the scientific doctor to introduce a soul and perhaps faith, and that's earth shattering, and then also breaking a civilization at the same time.
Yeah, I really liked that.
And Michael has a couple of really great lines, which I tried to write down as fast as I possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
The father figure says, perhaps devotion means to hear when gods tell us something new. I thought that was really good. And then Michael I don't know. Maybe I didn't write it down.
The bit where she said, just because you know about us doesn't mean the gods aren't there as well. Like, our existence doesn't get rid of your gods.
Yeah, beliefs can evolve. Denying that can be bad. Like,
yeah,
you can evolve through your beliefs and not, and by denying evolution of your faith or of your religion or of your what your society is doing, like by denying that, you can actually hurt each other. But that conversation about breaking that particular thought pattern, I think that was my favorite part, because I thought that they did a great job of being gentle about it in a way.
Yeah, not being condescending. Like, the existence of technology and the fact that we've explained the origin of this summit and we've explained that you don't have to do the sacrifice, that doesn't mean your other rituals aren't valid and what you believe to be a god isn't there as well. Like, the Bajorans are a great example of this, because when I was a lot younger, it bugged me that the Bajorans were so, like, heavily into religion, when they were surrounded by spaceships and replicators and holodecks, but their gods were literal aliens that live in the wormhole. So it's just about what your definition of a god is. So the Denobulans basically are gods to these people, and everything that their religion is founded on could be based around what the Denobulans gave them. Kind of why we have the Prime Directive and we don't interfere with people. But it's all about interpretation. I think it's really bold of a science-forward show to also say there are beliefs beyond this that are totally valid and don't discredit. Our technology doesn't discredit your belief system as well. It's really cool.
There's a line that Captain says, nothing we have shown you removes that.
Yes, exactly.
There is just an also us. And I'm not going to get too deep into my own personal experiences with how this impacts me directly, but it's just such a nice theme to see being pressed on, and not, and maybe to some it's heavy handed because this episode's really breaking apart a society. It's breaking into a scientific mind of this doctor character who had the Trill experience. The idea that we can have also and be okay, that someone else's belief system doesn't mean that your belief system is completely eradicated. Like, it's such a tricky conversation to have. And I think when we try to have it on a massive scale, like making absolutes, it doesn't always do good. And I didn't feel like this episode was trying to do that. I think they were just speaking to this moment, but then also it's just this theme, because I know so many different types of people, and I don't ever want to think that their particular way of looking at things is just absolutely wrong. I see it as an also, like, oh, that's an interesting perspective. Like, if they want to get combative about it, then I usually take a big step back from wanting to develop a deeper, meaningful relationship with them, because intolerance is really difficult for me. But that is another sort of interesting moment where this they made this poor father make, like, this poor guy.
Oh my goodness.
And she's, you know, Michael's begging him, saying the rain is coming whether she dies or not.
Yeah.
Believe me. Believe in technology. And there's just a lot to dig into in those deeper themes of this episode. And it seems like they didn't spend too much time on it either. It was just kind of at the end where it was all hitting on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my standout. The rest of it's interesting. I thought I thought where we went, this planet with this, like, sort of redwood, miniature redwood forest-esque kind of biome was really beautiful.
It's a really cool idea.
I love the language of the locals.
The whistling was
the
great.
Kind of cadence. But that took such a backseat for me, didn't it?
That's, like, it's so strange. Like, they introduced this language and I'm like, oh, that's beautiful. It's like the comet language, the singing that we talked about in Strange New Worlds. It's really, really interesting. And it disappears. And I'm like, why did we call this episode Whistle Speak?
Yeah.
It should be called, like, Summit or something like that. But they did a great job with the whistles. I do kind of like that they did the opposite of Darmok, whereas they're just like, everything is metaphor. And we're constantly like, how do you build a starship out of metaphors? They, for this species, were like, the whistles are just used in certain ways and across long distances and in certain occasions. They still have a phonetic, usual alphabet and language to speak with day to day. It's kind of a fuck you to Darmok in some ways.
Maybe so. Yeah, the whistle speak was confusing. I mean, I got it. And I liked it at the very beginning. My first thought was like, oh, here we are in Hunger Games. And it had that kind of, like, musical sort of quality. There was clearly a language in it because the universal translator was picking up what they were saying. And they didn't spend a ton of time on it. And maybe that's for a purpose, you know. But there was this quick moment where they built so much history of this group of people in such a short scene that I thought worked really well. This back and forth of these kind of, like, places that they're coming from, and this elder woman, for example, who had a whole bunch of dust in her lungs, and how she had to do her dusting, which they didn't hyper explain, but we all know that she had to get the dust off the crop or they're gonna die. Like, we all know. And I love it when a writer will allow the audience to fill in these blanks of detail. And it's what you get when you read. When you read a book and your imagination fills in the blanks, and then they trust the audience to kind of go along with it, give just enough that you can kind of picture it. And I thought that that worked really well for this society.
Yeah. Instead of giving us a massive exposition dump from the computer archives, we get to fill in the blanks through specific examples. So they tell us about the journey, the marathon. She tells us about the dusting that she had to do. How valuable rain is. And through those specific examples, we fill in the gaps and build out this image of what this species is. And it's so frustrating because it's such efficient storytelling compared to the kind of long-winded, more clumsy. Clumsy isn't fair, but the more long-winded, dragged out story that we had last week when we're doing a lot of dump about the Breen and Locke and Mole. And it's like, you can do it, so why didn't you do it? It's so interesting how two episodes can be tackling similar things and execute it completely differently, and the difference that makes. I think that's why I liked this week so much.
I also like the idea of this alien species, like, seeding rain. That was really fun for me too.
The Denobulans, yeah.
And that the Denobulans did this thing, and then I don't remember any of the creatures. Like, okay, so the civilization that we're interacting with, the Whistlers.
I can't remember their name either. Yeah.
The Whistle Speakers. I'm sure Helemno?
Yeah, Helen.
I'm looking at my notes here.
Helena Bonham Carter's, I think.
The thought about how would these people see this technology and evolve to interact with it. It was perceivable to me to have this, like, old generations passed down. Okay, maybe only one priest can go into this room and pull this lever, you know, which was obviously very technological. So I believe the father making the leap to technology, because underneath his simple rug was a very complicated piece of technology he had to like lift up and move. So there's a lot of technology happening around. There's moving pieces to all of the windows, you know. So he's privy to seeing this. And we know that it's a very private space that no one can really go into, because they set the scene when Tilly and Michael arrive and begin to speak to them. And there's just that brief exchange of like, oh, honey, you don't know that no one can go there? And oh, no, I came from a far away.
I came from the east.
And then this just sort of slow development, not slow in a bad way, but this paced development of the towers having fallen. And that's why there's fewer people here. I just thought that the delivery of information worked for me. Yeah, so I really found myself liking this episode.
Yeah, there's another element that I really liked that hasn't worked so well for me in previous episodes, but I think worked really well in this episode. And that's some of the inter-character playing and conversations that we get this week, mainly Tilly and Burnham. So, and I'm really, really grateful for this, because Tilly and Burnham have been, or they were, extremely close in season one and season two. They were bunkmates in season one, which is when we had the time travel episode a couple of weeks back. Tilly, Burnham said, you were worried that the mutineer, me, was going to kill you in your sleep or something.
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
So Tilly was the first person to really welcome Burnham to the ship and say, cool, you're a mutineer, we're going to be friends. And they would go jogging together through the ship.
Oh, really?
Right? And Tilly was never able to keep up. Tilly struggled. She was like, cardio isn't my thing, I can't jog. And now they're doing this jogging on the planet. Burnham is the one that can't keep up. Tilly is the one that's been learning her cardio and keeping going and carry. It was so freaking clever to
Tilly
have them jog
around
together.
Her.
Yes, which is what Burnham did in season one. Did
really?
Like a little jog around her through the corridors of the ship. I loved
it. Oh my God.
It's such a cool, that's how you do callbacks. That's such an incredible payoff to season one. And it makes me think, did they know that this was the last season? Because that's
maybe
a great
it was the
way
right
to pay
time.
Off that relationship. Just the perfect time to do that. It shows growth. It respects their relationship. I loved that moment so, so much. That's when I tipped over into, oh, this is a good episode. This is doing some stuff. So, yeah, super satisfying.
Once again, that you know the things that you know, because I would have never been able to like touch the heartbeat of that scene. The one that really got me and showed me more of Tilly's like vim and vic, like her, like, I don't know, her spunk was when she and Rava, I think is their name, the child of
the prodigal child,
was starting to kind of, Rava comes back when Tilly starts to sort of tip, like maybe fall over and pass out. And Rava comes back and says something along the lines of, I thought you were, you can't give up because I need to have some competition. And Tilly says like, what? How does Tilly say it?
You're a little shit, aren't you?
You're a little shit, yeah.
You're a little shit, you know that? It's so great.
It was so funny.
That's Tilly all over. Like, one of the first times where she overcomes her kind of like shyness, it's in front of, I don't know if it's on the bridge or in engineering, but she explodes and is just, and says something along the lines of, science, fuck yeah! And it was the first F-bomb in Star Trek. Everyone looks at her. Burnham smiles. And that's very much Tilly. She just explodes with this, like, just in-the-moment stuff. You are very much a Tilly.
I love it. I've got Tilly energy. And then Rava just immediately volleys back, I can't hear you because I'm already ahead.
I'm too far ahead. Yeah.
And it was just this, a few lines that just show about Rava and about Tilly, that they are pushing each other along. And so to hear you say that Michael has been that with Tilly,
Tilly
in the past,
yeah,
to kind of like move each other along, it makes that scene, you know, even more.
It makes the fact that this is a race just, it's so fitting. It's such a clever way to slip that in. And then at the same time, what we have on the ship, the crux of that is Dr. Culber still wrestling with his experience from Trill, and pairing that with Book, I really liked. And I can't exactly put my finger on why. It's just,
I know why.
When we get to the like heavy feeling stuff, sometimes it can feel inauthentic. This felt really, really authentic. Like the cadence of their conversation, how they were relating to each other. And I think it's because these are two people that don't usually interact. This for me would kind of be like, maybe, what's a good example from TNG? Maybe like when Guinan and Worf interact. It's not a pairing you often see.
Interesting.
So when they are paired up and talking about something, I really pay attention. So I think a lot of it is in the pairings. Like I've seen Dr. Culber and Paul Stamets, the engineer, the husbands, talk a lot. And they usually end up in the same place. So having them share a problem with someone different, I think that's why it worked better for me.
Well, I think there's two reasons why it happened. Number one, they needed Booker's memory of Michael's time having a Trill inside of her to kind of connect, maybe? Did that happen? Did Michael have a Trill in her?
No, I don't think
so. Was she Trilly?
So, no.
Okay.
I think
the idea was that Michael went from loneliness, which was comfortable, to like welcoming another person. And that was a big jarring thing. And Michael had some insight. So I think a writing perspective, that was needed for the Doctor's character to grow. Mm-hmm. But then also I think the reason that you really liked it is because Booker wasn't talking to Michael about it.
I think that's it. Michael and Book weren't talking. I think that's why I liked it so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, writers.
Book is more than Michael. And this is one of my big things with relationship drama stuff in movies. In TV shows, a lot. There is so much of, I am defined by the pursuit of this person and the person that I'm with, and not enough about finding your own person and your own, just that comfort of being yourself as an individual. And they mentioned that I think Book mentions it to Dr. Culber, how he says sometimes when something is just for us, it feels less valuable. And it's important to not devalue things just because they are ours and they belong to us. So there was just lots of actually unique stuff that I don't see TV shows hitting on a lot being hit on in this episode.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What else did we like about this episode?
What did we get into? I guess the mystery is the next thing, the clue. But we're talking about things we like, and that's not something that I liked in this episode.
Yeah.
The development of the mystery and the next step of the clue. That, for me, once again, isn't working. I always go back to this question. I've got it in big writing. What would a bad guy do with this mystery? Because point of leaving these clues is as a test. They've said this over and over again. There's a test and there's a lesson to be learned. But I'm still thinking, if a bad guy, like an evil Romulan or the Borg or somebody comes along, what they're doing is killing everybody on the planet, breaking into the tower, and trying to work it out that way. And maybe they would match the symbol from the vial on the wall. So a lesson isn't being taught with this. They're just lucky Discovery is finding it. And that they're the good guys.
It seems like an assumption lesson like they did on the last one. Okay, I missed something. How did they get the clue? Where was the clue? I don't know if I just like looked away and took a sip of water
That
went by so fast. I know we ended the episode where she's glancing at the now fuller cylinder thing that collects all the clues.
So in the sacrificial...
How did they get the clue?
In the sacrificial chamber, the child sacrifice looked at the wall and there was four symbols. 1, 2, 3, 4,
correct.
Five.
And the symbol, one in the vial was like a 3 or something.
Yeah, the symbol for number 5 was the same scratch that was on the vial. Uh-huh. They assumed it was damage.
Uh-huh.
So they
part.
Went to the fifth tower. Because they were in the third tower. They went to the fifth one, and it was in there.
Okay. But we didn't see that part?
We didn't see that part, no.
Ah, okay. So it was just an assumption happening in the back.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Oh, that's a little sinful for me. But it's an interesting take, I suppose, that, you know, I guess I assumed that to seed the towers that no longer worked, they would need to have the vial, as if the aliens of the past knew that eventually would break down. So like, you know what, we're gonna give them the power to do this themselves and see what they do with it. I don't know. It's a little bit loose. It's a little bit loose for me as to how they unlock this.
Mm-hmm.
It anyone, like you said, bad guy would just go to that tower and break in, grab it and go. There's no lesson learned. There's nothing. Yeah.
It's my biggest problem because, and they keep reinforcing this, because at the end of the episode, I think it's Tilly or Burnham. I think it's Tilly asks, so what was the lesson here? What was the message that we were trying to be learned? I was like, if you've got the piece and it's not clear what the lesson was, it's not a great puzzle. your job hasn't really succeeded. It should be really, really clear if that's the intent. And it's just, it seems at odds with why they hid these puzzle pieces. They hid them to make sure that the wrong person didn't get hold of it, the wrong species didn't get it, or we didn't get hold of this technology until we're ready to use it. And this puzzle, unless something dramatic happens at the end that upends everything we've seen so far, this puzzle isn't doing that.
No, this particular... So, like, in one of them, they're protected by a sentinel, and the other one, they're protected by the predator locusts. But in this one, let's just say that whoever has the clue isn't playing a deadly seek and find game with an enemy with lock and maul. Mm-hmm. They have all the time in the world, let's just say. They would eventually find the tower and figure it out. Whether they know the numbers exist or not, they're going to eventually figure it out. So that's a little bit loose for me, but I do agree that it is a positive thing that we're moving forward and that the whole mystery thing is coming together. Mm-hmm. I don't think that anyone watching Discovery is going to question that our particular group of people have enough ethical, moral, spiritual, scientific, like a conglomerative mind to sort of use a power or destroy a power. I'm assuming they're going to be trying to destroy it to keep it safe, because the scientists before didn't want to destroy it. They wanted to create like a little puzzle piece to it or something, which is, you know, it's a storytelling trope, and I understand why they're doing it. Like, so I don't think that the tension here is very deep, because we don't believe that our crew is going to struggle with using this power for good or destroying it.
Well, and that's my fundamental sin.
Yeah, the issue is who's going to get to it first. And also, I guess, is Starfleet bad? Like, would this Red Directive and the Infinity Room guy who uses a legal pad, is he going to misuse it? Because I would believe that.
Kovich would 100%. We haven't seen Kovich's shady side yet in this season.
If you're willing to use ancient paper to write a simple list, you are an asshole. Like, that is a relic of history. How dare you just use paper? This would be like us coming across some sort of like papyrus from biblical times and writing a fucking grocery list down. Apples, banana,
bread. It'll be apples because he's an asshole. Yeah, it'll all be apples. I think he actually was sneakily implying time travel. I think when she was like, how did you get hold of this? And he's like, I'm resourceful. I think it's no big deal because he's a time traveling son of a bitch. And he's just like, I'll just pop back to the 21st century, to the 21st century, head over to Staples and get a couple more legal pads.
Yeah, not a big deal. It exists in mass. Mm-hmm. I also want to say, how did you feel about this, like the technology that they're using on this planet?
Mm.
With the bowls. How did you feel about that resolving the cough?
Oh, man, I would rather...
Did you think it was simple or interesting? I thought it was really interesting.
I would rather dig into that than... Oh, man, I don't know what I would take out of the episode. It was really interesting. It was confusing. I didn't understand how it worked. I was kind of sinning the fact that we have those fucking bowls and like our hippie people do like the bowl spinning and the resonant stuff. But they kind of turned it on its head from where my gut instinct is going to be, oh, this is a kooky ritual, into, oh, there's some science behind this and there's some technology behind it. So, I thought it was fascinating. I kind of wanted to know a little bit more about it.
I think it was vibration. The vibration shaking up the... So, because I'm a massage therapist, what she was doing is called, like, tapotement, which is a way of breaking up something in the lungs. Mm-hmm. So, if this elder person has a whole bunch of stuff in her lungs and it's kind of congealing or whatever, it's going to break it up so she can kind of cough it out. And then you bring the bowls in, and I thought, oh my gosh, like what if it's just the vibration like breaking up the sand in her, and then she starts to cough and it starts to come out. And I thought that was an interesting sort of way of showcasing some potential element of what they were going for. I thought it was like a little interesting thing, and it might be the, as I reflect back on the episode, one of the last kind of highlights that we maybe haven't talked about. Besides Book using an actual shuttle to play a video game. I like that too.
He was using the shuttle to play asteroids. I loved it so much. It kind of was like, we have some like lots of kooky medicine on the planet, and there's like a lot of interesting beliefs around like vibrations and using like magnets and shit to do things. What I liked about this is that it was, what if there was science behind that and propelling it? Like, what would be the scientific application if this worked? And it's clear that something is happening here, and that maybe it's the magnetic poles on that planet that are different and allow it to work. So I thought it was, it played on a stereotype that I wasn't expecting. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I actually would like to go back to this planet and explore it a bit more.
I would now.
Yeah.
Now that I know it's going to rain.
Oh, no, it's going to rain and there's no sacrifices.
And that there's no leaking radiation causing moss to change color. I'd go here.
Yeah, absolutely. If everybody should have been getting sick from the radiation, that would have been super dark.
If that was causing the sickness. The mushrooms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what if they ate moss?
Why wouldn't
and
you?
And they were just
the moisture. I think the last element I want to touch on is it was very obvious as me and you were watching the episode when the dominoes were kind of falling. Like, we very, very quickly were like, oh, they're dead. And there's going to be a sacrifice at the end of this. Like, it's really interesting how play by numbers this festival of joy thing and everyone's happy, and then suddenly it turns super duper dark into this sacrifice, as if nobody realized that sacrificing people was a bad thing until it comes to the very end. Other than the dad, he knows. And it's just like, I'm actually impressed that it didn't take the episode down more notches for me. How did it hit you? Because obviously we've seen this before.
I mean, I think that it plays on what we know historically has happened, which is when you're trying to understand the celestialness of our world, like, you're looking to the stars, you're looking to the sun. We just had the solar eclipse again. Can you imagine back whenever they were erecting like rocks to try to make sense of their life? And you know, they're like, just go until you can see the stones, then you'll find us again. And that's how you communicated. And then all of a sudden the sun goes away and somebody did one weird thing and they fell down and broke their neck and the sun comes back. Uh-huh. And so everyone thinks, oh, well, I guess we have
that's
to kill somebody
takes.
Because that's how the sun comes back.
I'm having this great image of they've just finished Stonehenge and just by coincidence, an eclipse happens and they're like, fuck, we did the eclipse.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, it's like I said earlier, it's not a big leap in logic to think that this society would do something like that. And I did, I was back and forth on it for a little while too, because they get back and everyone's celebrating and they're drinking water. I actually said to you, well, I guess we're stoning them now. No, okay, we're not stoning them now. It took a minute to be like, yep, I'm in a room and I can't get out. And it's like, oh, yep, here we go. You know, I also thought it was interesting that it wasn't the society killing them, but that it was like Hunger Games style.
Yeah, the natural, just the makeup of that room was doing it.
Yeah. Yes, the technology was going to kill them because that's what was going to be seeding the rain. And I think the symbolism is pretty on the nose there. And what also just sometimes things happen that are mysterious and magical and mystical, and we try to make sense of them. And sometimes the more we do that and the more we build around that as being the answer to the problem, the more trouble we find ourselves getting into. Mm-hmm. So...
yeah,
I didn't mind that was part of this episode.
It's tough for us to wait for science to do its thing, because sadly science doesn't care about our patience. So in order to get behind why something is actually happening, you need a bit of patience. And that's frustrating. And it might take longer than your lifetime to figure it out. So you fill the gaps with whatever is either comfortable or whatever's been told to you by your ancestors. But there we go. Just a couple of little things I wanted to touch on. I love the light show at the beginning of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're doing
the
biometric scan of the liquid. I was like, oh, this is cool.
Really,
I don't
pretty.
Know if it's necessary, but it's very cool.
Well, it was pretty.
It's very pretty.
We had like close-ups of faces and then sort of just the spectrum of color sort
very
of as
well
the
directed.
Different scanners.
Yeah,
yeah,
really,
and it kind of looked really neat. I thought that looked
cool. I really liked that. I love the therapy droid. The hologram thing.
Oh my gosh, yes.
That was so fun.
Ooh, how did you feel about that? Like,
it seems logical to me, if not terrifying.
It is terrifying. Like, bringing back a dead member of your family to be your therapist.
I mean, I don't know if there is therapeutic science behind that. That feels quite traumatizing to me and perhaps unhealthy. But I think it depends on your relationship to that relative. So his abuela, obviously, maybe she passed away very naturally, and he was just completely fine with her passing and is able to access her in a healthy way.
I think the idea is that there's this technology that's being developed that will access your memories and find a person that you can talk to.
I think that's the idea. Yeah,
whether it's
correct.
Your family member or not. But the idea of coming face to face with somebody who is dead and trying to work through trauma while also being reminded about why you loved this person, while also being reminded that they're not
it's
real.
It's a lot. Uh-huh.
How many people would just bring back a dead pet to just hold?
Why wouldn't you? We're also in a world where holodecks exist. So I'm reminded of Wesley, who lost his dad. When Wesley turned 18 or something like that, his dad left a holographic message for him. So Wesley goes to the holodeck and is face to face with a holographic version of his dad. And there, it's an interactive program where they can have certain conversations. Like, we live in a world, they live in a world where that is already happening. Like, they are already able to bring back whoever they want. So maybe there's already ways that they've dealt with that and, like, kind of they're used to it. It's not a new thing.
But there's a difference between me recording something and then giving someone a choice on whether or not they want to watch it in the future versus using a computer program to alter someone that I trust to tell me historically accurate information that will amplify their advice.
Yeah.
Because that's the idea here, is that Abuela's advice will ring true to the receiver because it's so authentically Abuela.
But it's I completely agree with you because it's our perception. It's
exactly.
Not that person. It's our perception
exactly.
And our biases of who they were. So it's, I don't know the practicality of how this would work, but it is fascinating.
Here's what it does, is it hits on the idea that there is someone, the storytelling idea that there's someone that knows you very, very well, and listening to them talk is very powerful. Mm. And what this episode did it's very creepy. I personally think this is terrifying because he actually stops his abuela from talking to correct how she would have given advice, meaning that he is hacking his own brain to receive whatever truth this computer program is going to spit out of through a filter of his abuela. So he's micro correcting his own counselor
to give him what he wants. Uh-huh.
And this is the part that I don't know that they're trying to dig into here, but this character is really struggling with whatever revelation he is having. Mm. He scans his brain. He doesn't have any physical problems. And he's trying to work out how this change of his personality makes any kind of scientific sense.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing that'll turn him into a cuckoo bananas person. And if they don't turn him into like one of those doctors that just goes nuts, then I don't know what they're trying to do right now with the details they're sharing, because him hijacking a counselor isn't really telling me that he's healthy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, what's interesting is that he does try to hijack her and say she should know this answer, there must be an issue. And I think the episode kind of deals with it, because she replies saying, no, I am dealing with it. Like, my answer would be, because I'm a person of science, it would be to push you to finding a scientific answer. So there's no problem with the program.
But no, but he had already told the computer, like, that's wrong. And so maybe you're right. I can't say no. I'll say this. My interpretation was that he stopped the computer. He said, that's not how that would go. And then she continues on, I thought, after the program shifted her into a direction that would get her there.
No, my interpretation was that the computer didn't have chance to change anything. The hologram cut him off and said, this is the advice I would give you. Like, don't go changing anything. I would be pushing you towards a scientific... I wouldn't be able to give you spiritual advice because I was a person of science. That was my interpretation.
I guess you could interpret that either way, but he was still saying, no matter what, he was still saying, she wouldn't say that. We got to fix this. This is the thing. We as humans are going to make people into these images and put them onto pillars and want them to be specific things. And so he's tweaking with something that likens to the idea of, if you had a hologram with which you could manipulate, how would you make it into your perfect interpretation? So you talked about Jordy doing this with the girlfriend, And people have done this throughout the storytelling many, many times. And how would you tweak a vacation location so that it hits that dopamine for you? So it's not...
This is what I mean, though, because with holodecks, I think we, by this point, we might be numb to it because they've been able to do that for hundreds of years. Ah, but Culber wouldn't have done that. This would all be new to Culber because they didn't have holodecks in his original timeline.
Interesting. So, yeah,
good point.
I don't know. It's a really fascinating thing. I'm glad you brought it up because I love that they were speaking Spanish. It does. I love that they were speaking Spanish. I love the idea of being able to reach out to someone that knows you for advice. Yes. And, you know, not everybody has that. Let's just remind ourselves that if we don't have that in our own lives, in our real lives, listening to this podcast right now, if you don't feel like you have that person, it's time to figure out how to develop a relationship with someone so that in the next 5, 10, 20 years, you do have that person. And it is hard work. I'm lucky enough to have a loving mother and father who have known me for my whole life. So if I wanted to talk to them and get some advice, they're going to be able to like look back on my life and give me advice, I would hope, based on all their experiences with me. But that's still not a guarantee, you know? Mm-hmm. It's still not a guarantee. So my hope now at this age that I'm at now is to go, okay, if I want to have a community that can know me very well, and if I want to develop those friendships and those relationships where I have that abuela person that I can say, hey, I'm having a crisis here, that they can go, I know you. Here is what's true. Here's my truth for you. That's a really powerful thing to want. Yeah. And it's especially powerful when you're floating on a starship. Yep. Like when you want your family, when you want to have that. And I think for Discovery to like hit on that really quickly, that deep family, someone knowing you, it's hard whenever you don't feel like that's true. And so it's hard work. And sometimes you're born into a family that knows you, loves you, cares about you. And you can see this relationship on screen between the doctor and his grandmother. And you know that relationship. Yeah. I'm lucky enough to be like, oh, I had that with my grandmother. And I would bring her back if I could. And she wouldn't be a zombie computer program. But there is something about the loss and going, oof, I don't have that. So how do you find it? How do you find that in today's truth? Like, is it through a counselor relationship where they're neutral and so you know that their advice is based on, you know, their studies and however they've reached their particular craft? Is it a family member? Is it a friend? You know, we're all crafting our echo chamber and we're all crafting who we want to hear from. And so it's a huge topic to hit on. And I'm glad that we sunk into it for a second. And I hope that it's one that, like, even with all the big hits that Star Trek does with the different themes, I hope it's one that like hits the audience in the right way, because that might be, now that we've talked about it, one of my favorite little moments of this episode that I totally forgot existed for a split sec.
Well, it's extra interesting for me because there's another angle they could come at this from, which is this is a crew removed from time. Like everybody on Discovery has been yoinked from the 2200s and has now been living in the 3100s for 3 years. They are now removed from their family, their friends, everything that they know, those connections that you're talking about, all that they have is each other. They should all be in therapy for the amount of loss that they're all feeling. They've all lost pretty much everybody, and they had like a split second to make that choice as well. They had no time for goodbyes or anything like that. So I wish the show was taking that angle a bit more and dealing with the trauma of being out of time. But yeah, super interesting.
Yeah. I think we've had this sort of like quick revelation multiple times during the show where we take a step back and go, whoa, the amount of trauma that the crew would be experiencing on XYZ and be able to continue to function, that has to mean that they have healthy dialogue somehow with a counselor. So for the show to show us the evolution of a computer-led counseling program was pretty unique. I liked it. And also the idea that who does the counselor get their counsel from?
Love that. And you should be as a counselor. I think counselors are expected to be in therapy themselves. It just popped into my head. We have seen this kind of hologram being pulled from the psyche before, and it's in season one of Picard with Rios and the La Serena. And how each of his crew is pulled out of his brain. So the pilot is a version of him. Yeah. The doctor is a version of him. The engineer is a Scottish version of him. And they do get into a room and have this therapy session together because each one of them contains a piece of this memory. So yeah, Star Trek loves touching on this idea. I like it when it does. It's amazing.
Yeah, me too.
Just a couple more things, very, very quick things to wrap up. I love the joy that Burnham experiences when she's talking about the languages and the xenobiology and the language and stuff. Like, her eyes light up and Tilly can see it as well. It's fun to see her be an explorer for a minute instead of being at battle stations. And very lastly, I loved that we had a good old isolinear chip switch around to fix the control panel thing, move the chips from here, and isolinear chips actually got a shout out because that's the technology that would have been used by the Denobulans when they put the control panel thing together. Isolinear chips for the win. I love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'll launch me into some sins, though.
Yeah.
So should we do pips first?
Let's do it. Overall pips for the episode.
I think I'm going to go with 3 pips.
Yeah, I'm going to 3.5 pip. This is a really, really, really good one. This is, for me, doing what Star Trek does best. I really liked it. So yeah, 3.5 pips. Well, with that, let's head over to engineering to do some sins. Battle stations, red alert. No, damn it. Battle stations, black alert.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Let's fly, Ambassador.
Mine was the time to fix the bomb cliche. Just this idea. It was really cool looking, though.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention all the cool technology.
I'll
sprinkle it into the sins. But this idea that she opens up this panel, leans against it. A squirrel could touch this thing and it would pop open, apparently.
Just a bear sits on it.
The bomb appears and then it's also transported through this eye technology up into the ship where the other person finagles with it, and it was just the ticking time bomb cliche.
Yeah, the countdown, and then the moral conundrum and convincing the person to do it. And then, so I mean, this ties into a lot of cliches, which is the prodigal child loses their mother, remembers a lullaby, that's key to the story. The overprotective father cliche, like we mentioned it in the show, but this has every single cliche going. It's put all of them into one
adventure.
And
I recognize, I know that this is not a bomb, but they literally said if you mess it up, everybody dies. So it is a bomb.
It's a plot bomb.
It is a plot bomb.
It's absolutely
one of those
bomb.
Where, like, which wires am I cutting? And it kind of is supposed to like, there's the tension of the bomb being, you know, fixed, mixed with the tension of who is going to win the thirst race.
The problem is we've already peaked when it comes to moving isolinear chips around to save a plot bomb because
that's
Data did it
Data.
In the naked. You remembered? With the speedy.
The Data speed?
Yes! Oh, it's so great. How long is this going to take? Slightly longer than we have left. Oh, brilliant.
Great.
Yeah, we've already peaked with Data. Okay, this is my biggest sin, and it's one that I've seen echoed in the chat, and I think everybody at home will agree with me. Discovery, I beg of you, stop edging us with aliens that you refuse to show us. The Zenkethi, the Denobulans, stop teasing me with aliens I know and love, and they're not showing them to me. I need to see Denobulans again. Stop it.
Oh, no. You've already got the Breen, the jelly Breen. You don't need
something
else.
Well, the irony is you've shown me the one alien that I haven't seen before. I want some fan service. Give me some Denobulans.
I don't know. I think there's usually mention of some alien thing I haven't seen before, so I don't know that it bothers me that much.
I want to see it. But I'm happy they get... So the way I would be sinning this regardless, because I'd be like, why are you inventing a new species when you can just pick one that we already know? So they literally can't win. I want everything. I really do. I want my aliens and I want to eat them too.
Ew.
Wait. Your turn, Ambassador.
Gross. My original sin on this was making the death chamber this elaborate. but then I realized that the death chamber is actually the technology.
I really want the Denobulus to come back and just be like, wait, no, 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 that's not what we meant. That's the worst. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to send retinal tricorders because I don't like them. It doesn't make it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop putting tricorders in my eyes. I get it. It makes sense. We are not far away from contact lenses being able to do heads up displays and whatnot. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah. It's like whenever you see somebody that's in the movies and they're in the desert and they pull out their little canteen and then they pull it up to their face and then just pours out all over and doesn't go into their mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But stop it.
Yeah. Stop it. Enough.
Stop it.
I mean,
that's enough now.
One of my favorite sins from the chat was creating a tablet that dehydrates you in the middle of a drought to summon the water. Yeah.
Like, there's so much drought sin in this episode. There's just so much going along. But the idea, I think, is that they're trying to recreate this moment historically.
Yeah.
When obviously someone decided to give somebody water, died of dehydration, and then right then the water kicks in. They're like, mm-hmm. Well, we're doing this again next year, everybody. Yeah.
It's like there's an episode of Malcolm in the Middle where the dad is like, he gets a strike and then he thinks it's because he like rubbed his shirt a certain way and then he gets a strike again, but he does something different and he ends up with like this 60-second routine that he has to do to guarantee he'll get a strike. We love patterns. They make us feel comfortable. Uh-huh. We need patterns and explanation.
This is why people don't wash their socks before a game. They have all these
ridiculous.
They stop shaving.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Hey.
I mean for sports.
I don't sports.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, Ambassador. I know you want to send the legal pad.
I really do. Do it. But I already did it in the show. So.
Did you? Was there anything else you want to say about it?
No. It was really funny. I was actually watching that scene and I saw, I was like, I started sending the legal pad in the future.
Yeah.
By the way, that desk was fucking cool looking.
Oh,
was it
yes.
Not? How
so
fucking cool
freaking
was that desk?
Cool. Beautiful. Made my eyes go wonky.
Mm-hmm. And so then he has this ugly yellow legal paper. And so I started writing about it. And then he references it himself. And so I almost thought, okay, so I can't send it. But then, I figured out there are so many more cool pieces of paper to use than legal pad. But
it's true. But it's very Kovich. And I like that it's kind of analog because as a spy person, maybe having pen and paper is kind of like, this isn't digital. Nobody can find this, etc. And he would just find the most boring paper that he could possibly find to do it. It wouldn't be fancy at all. Yeah, that would be my argument against that.
Yeah.
We have a species looks very human cliche in Star Trek. However, that kind of ties in to the seeding the planets and everybody looking vaguely human. Yeah. So I guess we're not allowed to send that anymore, but we will because it's still nonsense.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely nonsense. I mean, everything is just the simple cliche of being in the right place at the right time. You know, Michael beams in, is able to hear the humming song, which she's able to then hum, which then convinces the father to listen to her. She's got this really cool eye scan thing. Just scan the room and find the cool thing in the floor and fucking pull it, you know? And there's lots of ways to solve that problem, but I know that the story is trying to do what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
Lots and lots and lots of just cliche things happening. All over the place. Mm-hmm.
Everywhere all at once. This was a silly little one, but when Culber is trying to convince Stamets to help him with the neural scan and whatnot, Culber says, how long has it been since we were able to work together on a project? And I'm like, are we just forgetting Fred? They took apart Fred together. They opened his body up and they took his memories and they did the circuitry. They were literally working together days, weeks, if not days ago. Why are we forgetting Fred?
And this sin is from Fred dying.
Stop erasing Fred from our memories. We will not forget Fred. He is not better off dead.
They're not bringing him back.
I don't think they are.
Oh, I'm so sad about that, honestly.
He's just the best.
Something about seeing a Data-esque droid just makes me so happy.
So
how
happy.
Funny would it be to have this old tech android trying to integrate with a ship? the ship would fall in love with Fred.
Oh,
you know,
that's
would,
the love story we need. Zora and Fred.
That's the love
Fred.
Story we need. Zora and Fred.
Fedora. Hashtag Fedora.
Yes. Hashtag Fedora.
It's amazing. We're going to do the biggest one of the episode, or at least I am going to do the biggest one of the episode, which is fucking Prime Directive. It is so contradictory. I cannot get my head around it. So the Denobulans, somehow they're allowed on the Dune planet to install these water towers that are going to give everybody water, because otherwise everyone is going to die.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Is the Prime Directive for just like Federation people, or is it just like accepted by all people?
It's the Federation. Like the Prime Directive
is
a Federation
thing. So
these
are part of the
thing.
Federation. This alien
the
species is part of...
I'm pretty sure a part of the Federation, yes. So they should have to abide by
so
the Prime Directive.
So somebody's going
to
be in big trouble.
Well, I don't think so, because I think this was allowed. I think it was somehow allowed for them to save this race, even though the natural course of their history is to die. Like, that's the whole... They're just going to die. Okay. But the fact that we've now interfered and given them a religion based around these summits that bring the water, I feel like the Prime Directive is moot, because they've done it. They've already, like, tampered...
Yeah, they did it.
They've tampered
yeah.
with these people.
There's no going back.
You now have, like, an obligation to save them, I would think. Or, like, the transport... Like, Prime Directive's out the window. You've already interfered. And they're saying that we can't save this woman. She's coughing up a lung. We can't save this woman because of the Prime Directive. Her great-great-great-great-great-grandparents should be dead. Like, you saved them with the water. Mm-hmm. What's the nuance in not saving this woman? It's so confusing. But even if I screwed that up and the Denobulans aren't part of Starfleet or the Federation or whatever, it still feels weird that they're sticking to the Prime Directive so much when the species shouldn't exist if it wasn't for outside interference.
It's just bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to go along with your passion.
Yeah. And nothing will come of it. I guarantee it. Nothing will come along with her beaming in front of this guy.
Which is surprising, because there was the episode earlier on where, like, I think it was the first episode where they're immediately called into a meeting. Rainer and Michael are immediately called into the meeting going, guys, you fucked up. So yeah. We've seen this episode immediately deal with
yeah.
trouble like this. So,
like this.
Yeah.
But
we'll
it's
see
the
happens.
Red Directive thing, so I think they'll just yeah. sweep it under the carpet or whatnot. But
probably.
It's always messy. When
probably.
We get into the Prime Directive, I'm always scratching my head. And this one fundamentally, so considering these people shouldn't exist were it not for the outside interference of other people. But there we go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for me.
Okay. I've got Stealing Your Language from the Clangers, which will be a reference maybe two people in the audience get. This was an old TV show where little pink people would live on the moon, and they spoke exclusively in whistles, and there was a soup dragon that also lived on the moon.
A soup dragon.
A soup dragon. And the Clangers would all talk to each other in whistles. So...
And you watched this?
I watched this with my mother.
Okay, that explains a lot.
They would whistle adorably, and they communicated with whistles, and Star Trek is ripping
and
off
soup.
The Clangers.
And
there
soup.
Was no soup. Don't be ridiculous. I'm amazed that they just ate the sugar cube, or the salt cube, or whatever that cube was. They were so trusting. They were so trusting.
We're
just going to eat this, regardless of our biology.
I honestly thought that maybe because they are advanced, that they had a way of counteracting it somehow, but no, they were just along for the ride.
Just in it, just full trust. I thought they were all going to like just rapidly be passing out, like just immediately dying. So back on the Prime Directive. Okay, you've decided to break the Prime Directive. You've beamed in, you've saved the day. Did you have to tell them about Discovery? Did you have to tell them that you also have a spaceship in space and give them an in-orbit view of their planet? Like, she doesn't just break the Prime Directive minimally. She's like, well, we're in for a penny, in for a pound. Let's tell them everything. It seemed unnecessary.
Yeah, it was kind of like, well, now that I've told you that I'm an alien, let me show you all of my secrets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can have the
but
whole
at the same
now.
Time, I think I can understand why they would need to have some evidence. And I've seen that happen in I think TNG before, where I was like, we need to show you
yeah.
more about what this
you
is.
To
we need you to actually see.
Yeah.
And they'll take them to the ship and then show them their planet from like the ship's you know, observation deck. And in this episode, there was no observation deck. They would just kind of showed a hologram or whatever.
And waiting for somebody to just straight up have a heart attack and just die from surprise. Yeah. It would be a big shock, I'd imagine. I just have one last thing from last week, which was mentioned by a few people when a couple of people emailed in. They took umbrage with the fact that Stamets is on the bridge, and as the ISS Enterprise emerges from the galactic Volva, he immediately says, "That's the ISS Enterprise." And a lot of people took issue with, like, how the hell did he read that so quickly? Because it's on the ship. And all we see is, like, the crest of the saucer section emerging. And he is immediately like, "Oh, it's the ISS Enterprise." I just took that as the ship scanned it and he read it and then said what the ship was. But it does kind of look like he's just looking at the ship, reads the name on it, and then immediately says it. So it might be a little bit too nitpicky, but I wanted to mention it because a few people emailed in.
I kind of wondered if there was something on the screen or, like, on their computers that scans it and then just shows you the information on the pad or something that's a little closer.
Kind of what
I
guessed.
Make a lot of assumptions about their technology. So,
well, I mean, they just invent whatever they want. It's so far in the future. Okay, well, with that, let's head over to the Captain's Ready Room to go over some predictions for next week. Welcome to the Captain's Ready Room, where we hear our predictions for the rest of the season and bask in our Q-like glory if anything we have predicted has previously come true. Sadly, the liquid is just distilled water. It is not Odo. It is not a changeling. Sorry, Danae.
Just water. Just water.
That's it.
So boring.
One of our listeners did predict that this would be completely Lock and Mole vacant, but then they would turn up at the very, very end. They didn't technically turn up. We are heading towards them.
That was a very good prediction. That's a good prediction, because they actually were mentioned, like, hey, but it wasn't at the end. It was kind of before she went. Wait, no, it was at the end, wasn't it?
Very, very end. Well, at the beginning, she assumes that Kovich is going to tell them to jump to Lock and Mole's position. But he says, no, we have another ship searching for them. You need to focus on the clues.
Their quote-unquote turning up is by mention at the end.
Yes.
I think totally counts. That's absolutely a good prediction.
Yep. Yeah. Well done. Good prediction. For the rest of the season, you've predicted that Locke and Mole will have a big redemptive moment and become the good guys, and that Luck will join Starfleet. Can't really develop anything further on that.
No, I think I would need to evolve that to be that he's going to die.
Yeah, I think that's my prediction, is that Luck is actually going to die and that will motivate Mol. He'll end up sacrificing himself, I believe. My prediction was that the liquid will be alien DNA that is used to find the planet. I was wrong. It's Star Trek knows. I think Discovery knows that would have been a very Star Trek thing to do. It's kind of cool that it is just water.
Just water.
And it's the water itself is the clue and the scratchings. I think that was fine.
Which is a bummer, because I thought that it was like a person, because they like scanned it and it seemed to have like a some sort of a presence.
Yeah, it was a signature, but I think it's just it had a Prime Universe signature in a Mirror Universe ship. I think that's what they were detecting.
So it wasn't a person.
No, it wasn't a person. No.
Which is bad.
Next week's episode is called Erega.
Great. That gives me nothing.
It does.
Is that a planet?
No. So Erega is the thing where last week's episode, Burnham said, oh, there's an Erega out on you, your Breen. And Erega is that, I think it's that bounty thing where the Breen are chasing down Locke because he's revealed his face.
Okay.
I think it gives us quite a lot.
I don't know if
lot.
It's because he revealed his face or because he killed everybody.
That too.
Because he did kill everybody. I don't have any other predictions. I mean, we know that there's one scientist remaining from the list. So if there's something, you know, there, I immediately assumed that it was that person's name. But I don't know enough about Star Trek or Star Trek lore to make any leaps in logic about the remaining scientist. Obviously, though, they've given it to us, which is interesting because earlier on in the season, they were saying that no one knew the names or something like that. Like, we didn't have information, and now they're giving it to the audience.
Kovich, Ex Machina. Just Kovich.
Yeah.
He knows all of the things.
And so I can't, there's got to be some clues in there about who those people are, but I don't know what they are. And obviously, if it's this Breen name, like the bounty blood tie or whatever, mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just not excited about it. That just tanked my interest in next week down to like a negative 6.
I'm going
to
try and boost it up for you. My prediction is that the mystery will completely stall for a week. We're not going to get the next clue because the Discovery and crew are going to have to face the Breen. And I think the Breen are going to also discover Locke and Moll and want to fulfill this Erega bounty thing that they have against them. And I think we're going to get an interesting space battle. I think we're going to have conflict with the Breen. I have slightly higher hopes. I think we're going to have quite an action adventure episode next.
Okay.
But with no mystery progression.
I don't know. I don't have a lot of interest in it at this moment in time. Like, I think now's a good time to just stop watching Discovery, everybody.
Just finish on episode 6.
Let's be done with it. I don't know. The idea that the Breen might be getting a hold of the weapon means that most likely the clues are either going to change hands and maybe they have to exchange clues for the weapon for their lives or something crazy like that, you know, that there's an exchange of some kind and it gives the Breen the advantage. And then there's more at stake than ever before for them to get to the weapon before the Breen.
There's an invisible ship that's been following an invisible Breen ship that's been following along the way, because these treasure hunts always have one of the bad guys that's letting the main people do the work for them, and then they swoop in at the end to get the weapon. Because you only need Discovery to do the work, and then you just swoop in at the last second to get the weapon.
I think the thing that I'm not looking forward to is they've been building this idea of this mysterious race, you know, that has given life to everything and that you could potentially use it for good or for evil. And I'm afraid that they're not going to spend a lot of time letting us live in that. I would hope that next episode we get to the weapon. Get us to the weapon.
No
chance. Let us see the battle. Let us see them actually use it for evil. And then let's go for the weapon and then change history again. You know, show us things going terribly so that we can see things going well. Instead, I feel like they're going to do what happens in every single one where it's just going to be rushed at the end. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
You can be nervous. I can be hopeful and also nervous at the same time. Well, with that, everybody, if you have any predictions or anything you'd like to send into the show, drop us an email, captainspod@cinemasins.com. Join our bustling community on Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins, and join our lovely Captain's Pod people in there. And with that, it's my voice that has been beckoning you home.
And it's stay strong, my good compeer from me.
Live long and pods back.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Are we going to be honest about what just happened?
We can. Yeah, we can.
I forgot to save my audio file, and then we had to completely redo this part of the podcast, and I'm sorry.
It's not your fault.
I'm sorry that it is. If I would have done my normal every single time thing, which is stop the show, save my audio, upload my audio, then we wouldn't be here. But instead, I ran out of my room because I was hot and tired and hungry.
So, fingers crossed, if you're listening to this in the outtakes, you had no idea because it was just a seamless intro. But you will never get to ever hear the first time I introduced the ambassador to the word jelly breens. You will not get that immediate reaction. That is lost forever.
Can I just try to redo it?
Yeah.
Just for fun?
Okay. I mean, you already have at this point. Just this is in the outtakes, okay. So you've already tried it.
Are you ready?
Yeah, okay.
That was my reaction to it.
Sorry, I thought I was going back into my intro. Okay.
That makes sense too.
What do you call the thing that you use to go to the beach when you're like swimming and stuff, or if you're in water?
The thing that you use to go to the beach.
Yeah, the thing that you wear.
Like a vehicle?
No. The thing that you use in the water that you wear to cover your body.
A swimsuit?
Yeah, you do call it a swimsuit. That's...
Wait, what do you call it?
We call it...
Hold on, let me guess. Hold on, let me guess. Wedding trousers.
No, it's not that. No, good guess.
Okay,
close.
Okay. Sunbathers.
No, okay. Good. No.
Okay.
Sun wellies. No, you're getting closer.
Really?
Yeah, kind of. I think our version actually sounds more American than yours.
Well, what is it?
Swimming costume.
No, you do not.
We call it
it's
a swimming
costume. It's not a
costume. It is. It's my swimming costume. It's the costume that I put on to swim.
But you don't call your regular everyday clothes like your clothes costume.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we call it the day costume.
No, you don't.
I'm currently wearing my recording costume.
You're fucking with me.
I'm not fucking with you. I only realized this because I watched Fall Guy today, and they did a whole thing where Ryan says to Emily Blunt, oh, you can bring your swimming costume, and he thinks it's hilarious for the same reason. But I'm Emily Blunt in this situation, and you're Ryan Gosling.
I don't know how I feel about that, but you know what? It's adorable. You and your words are adorable,
Don't
Ian.
You patronize. There were our words first, and then you bastardized them.
Super, super cute.
Swimming costume. Da, 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 da. Splash.
Swimsuit.
It's not a suit,
it's
is it?
Not a
it's
costume.
Not, it's not formal wear.
A costume
it's
is
more
what
of a costume
you
than it is
on
a suit.
Halloween.
No, it's what you wear for a theme.
So what do you call what you wear on Halloween?
Batman doesn't only wear his costume at Halloween. He wears it for his day job, his night job as well.
I'm not saying that the word costume is just for Halloween. It's just an example.
Mm-hmm.
Like a cosplayer is wearing a costume.
Correct. Yeah. A swimmer is wearing a costume.
It is not a costume. It is an appropriate...
The word...
No, it's appropriate attire for getting wet. Costume is like an elaborate thing that you wear that is not part of who you are. If you are a swimmer, you are wearing a swimsuit.
I would argue that I am not a swimmer. Therefore, when I swim, I need a costume to get me into the mindset of the swimmer because it's not the natural thing that I do. I need a costume to psych myself up.
Like, I hate swimming, so I get that. I agree with you about that. Cashews, chocolate, pea protein, and cassava.
It's pronounced cassava.
Oh, okay. Is it really?
I don't know. Slab backing me up with a Google search. Distilled water helps minimize buildup of materials on clothes and on the iron. I knew it. Distilled water is a thing. You do use that for ironing. I was right. That's the most important thing to know. That's all you need to know.
If they were to release a Star Trek candy, we obviously have the jelly bean. That's a given. What else? You know, like something like a little bonbon that's a tribble?
Yeah. Uh-huh. There's got to be some good puns in here. There has to be.
A knee
twix. Knee twix.
Instead of Neelix?
Yeah, knee twix.
Is that the one that tastes like meatloaf? Because that's...
Yep. No, it tastes like cheese. That's what they were just... All of the knee twixes would taste like cheese.
Send in your ideas for Star Trek candy, because there's got to be more out there. The jelly bean has inspired me. I feel like there would be like a little miniature moopsie, and when you bit into it, it would be
like a fondant center.
Oh, what are they called? You get them in the Halloween candies all the time. They're like a chalk.
Razor blades?
No, they're like a chalk.
Like the chalk candy.
The little round sort of...
Yeah.
The ones like little pretend... tablet looking.
Yeah, I think I know the ones you mean.
Ah, Smarties.
Oh, Smarties. But no, they're chocolate. They have a chocolate center.
No, they're not. No, Smarties over here are not chocolate.
What?
They're just like
Smarties
little chocolate disc.
No. They're chocolate with like a shell on the outside.
Here, let me show you my screen. This is another thing I love about doing the show with you is you seeing all of the things that are different. These are Smarties for us.
No, get the fuck out. Smarties? That's crazy. Who makes these? Is it Nestle?
I don't know, actually.
That's insane. Let me show you our Smarties. Here we go. That's a good picture of it.
They're like the candy necklace things.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah, that's bullshit.
They have extreme sour Smarties.
I would eat the shit out of those. I mean, I would actually eat them. They look great. Here's UK Smarties.
Okay.
Made by Nestle.
What the fuck is that?
It's chocolate.
That's like a knockoff M&M?
Yeah, it's a knockoff M&M. Yeah, but these are smaller. These are smaller than M&M's. They're more like disc-shaped.
Do you think Nestle knew that Smarties were doing well, so they released their own version of Smarties in the UK to fuck with Smarties?
I think these predate your Smarties.
Okay, let's find out. Let's do a quick search. Let's take a look. 1949.
1937, suck it!
Let's see. Smartie Candy Company is a sweet family business. January 10th, 1949, Edward D., brought his family from England to New Jersey Equipped with only two English. Machines in a rented facility, he succeeded in finding the Seedy Candy Incorporated making Smarties, America's favorite candy wafer roll.
Wow. Smarties are color-varied, sugar-coated, Draguet chocolate confectionery. They have been manufactured since 1937, originally by H.I. Rowntree and Company, who make the fruit pastels, and are now owned by Nestle. Smarties are oblate spheroids with a minor axis of about 5 millimeters. I love that. Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned, obviously, Arium turned up because there was time travel shenanigans and going backwards and forwards and whatnot. And as Ian often does, he remembered something off the top of his head, butchered it, and got some of it wrong. Do you remember how I said that the original Arium was switched out for a new Arium and then joined part of the crew, whatever? What actually happened? Arium number one, Sarah Mittage, was allergic to the Miriam cosmetic, the makeup and all of that stuff. It was like affecting her skin, so she was like, I literally cannot do this anymore, it's making me unwell.
It's like the Tin Man.
Yeah, exactly. So they brought in Hannah Cheeseman to play Arium in season two, and Sarah Mittage was recast as Lieutenant Nielsen. I flipped
also
some
had
of
to
that.
Wear makeup,
who only had to wear human makeup, didn't have to wear the prosthetic stuff. So they dealt with her having an allergy by recasting her as a human and then killed off the second person that was playing Arium in season two. So that's the story. Just wanted to get that completely right.
At the top of my trash bin is this massive pile of cat hair because Thunderstorm is shedding. It is getting warm. We're expected to have another record-breaking summer, which is just really discouraging after the last two record-breaking summers. So to think it's going to be even hotter, I can't even imagine what's about to happen to us. This cat is just blowing itself out. And I have a brush. And since he's such a cuddle cat, I can brush him. And so I'm pretending in a way that I'm like mama cat. And I'm just pushing him down and just like, you know, giving him a good old cleaning or whatever.
You will be groomed. You're using your tongue, I assume.
Yes. Okay, good, well, first good. I actually went and I got like a little tongue sleeve, kind of like a condom, but for your tongue.
Have
you
seen
know?
Those?
And it has.
They're real?
I'm joking right now.
No. There is a thing that you put in your mouth.
No.
And you.
No.
And it's a brush thing that you. And it's like you're grooming your cat.
I was joking. I was kidding.
I'm going to show it to you.
I didn't do it that. I have a brush. I used the brush. I held it in my hand. I used it like as we normally do. I didn't actually. I thought saying tongue condom would be funny.
No, this is an actual tongue condom. Yeah.
This isn't our rated show. I am a meow.
Screen.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm so nervous right now.
It's called a licky.
No.
That cat friggin' loves it.
No.
I'm buying you one.
No, you're not.
I am. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she has a second face that...
O'Reilly! You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people. O'Reilly.